A century of classical music and gems from the BBC archive.
Standing on top of the Berlin Wall, which for years has been the most potent symbol of the division of Europe.
News, events, unforgettable voices, and landmark music.
The so-called millennium bug could shatter our faith in this new technology.
Soundscape of a century. Listen again on BBC Sounds.
Time for Private Passions, and Michael Barclay's guest is the crime writer Stuart McBride.
My guest today is Stuart McBride, was born in Dumbarton and raised in Aberdeen. Abandoning his studies to become an architect, he went to work on the oil rigs scrubbing toilets. He then tried out careers as an actor, a web designer, and a computer programmer, all the while writing after work. He wrote four novels before his first, Cold Granite, was published in 2005. Since then, he's become one of our most successful and prolific crime writers, with 24 titles in all, sometimes labelled as tartan noir. Reviewers tend to say things like, "This isn't a novel to read over dinner," or "Slick, gruesome and brutally intelligent." Gruesome crime writing apart, Stuart McBride's other notable achievements include winning Celebrity Mastermind and coming first in the World Stovies Championship for his mastery of that popular Scottish potato stew. And, of course, we mustn't forget another achievement, Stuart, must we? Playing the banjo.
Well, not so much playing the banjo as putting off playing the banjo. I do own a banjo. All I need now is the dungarees and a rocking chair, and I will sit on my front porch in my croft with my 51 acres.
I can't see any banjo music on your music list today, apart from what we've just had, of course. Instead, we have Beethoven, Purcell, Bruch and Holst. But we're going to start with Wagner. Music I think you find inspiring to listen to while you work.
Well, I've always listened to music while I write because, I have tinnitus, so there's no such thing as silence for me. And two, when I was a project manager, I used to work in a cubicle farm, so I was surrounded by noise and other people. And my way of being able to concentrate is to have music on the whole time. And I thought, wouldn't it be really interesting to do a book to nothing but the Ring Cycle? So I've now written two full-length novels, the latest of which is being no less the devil, to an exclusive soundtrack of The Ring. If I am planning, plotting, writing, editing, copy editing, any of that stuff can only be done to Wagner.
How many times in all do you think you've probably listened to The Ring?
I have lost count. I have absolutely no idea, but it's got to be up there quite heavily because it takes me 4 months to do a first draft. So that's just 4 months of non-stop Wagner. It drives my wife absolutely potty.
Which excerpt have you chosen for us today?
Well, today we're hoping for Hi-Ho, Hi-Ho, Ho-Ho, which sounds terribly Disney-ish, but is far, far darker when you hear it.
Euch auf. Attila Jun in music from Götterdämmerung, the final music drama of Wagner's The Ring. Mark Elder conducting the Halle Orchestra and Choir. I'm very keen to ask you, Stuart McBride, about Aberdeen, a city that I've just recently discovered, because it's such a strong presence in your books. In fact, the title of your first published novel rather sums it up, doesn't it? Cold Granite.
Well, I think the big thing is that because I've lived here for nearly all of my life, my parents moved up when I was two, it is very much my hometown, and that means that I can make fun of it, I can show its dark side, while at the same time expressing sort of a genuine affection and love for the place. And one of the wonderful things about Aberdeen is that the same city can be completely different in the space of about 30, 40 seconds. When the sun shines, the granite sparkles, everybody walks with nice straight backs, there's smiles on the faces, chins are up, and the weather moves in very quickly and the sky darkens and all that grey sparkle disappears and it all darkens down. So the same street can have a very, very different feel within the space of moments. And that's extremely good for crime novels.
I was amazed to just walk down the road and find myself on a glorious beach.
It's lovely, isn't it? Huge, great big stretch of golden sand. And during the Victorian era, of course, this was a key destination holiday. You would come to Aberdeen and take the sands and the sun, which you wouldn't think that swimming in the North Sea now.
No. But swimming in the sea and rejoicing were many dolphins when I was there.
Oh, you did very well. Yes, we don't get to see those too often where I am, but it is lovely. It's a genuinely beautiful place, and it's a shame that so many people have forgotten what we have on our doorstep here in Aberdeen.
You use quite a lot of Doric, the local Aberdeen dialect, in your books. I wonder whether you want to keep that alive, and perhaps you could also give us some examples so we can hear what it sounds like.
We have lots of words up here that you just do not get anywhere else. Things like a breeze bowl, for example, is a gazunda, if you know what one of those is. And if not, it's a chamber pot. You can gnoot for a puckley chuckies. And that would be a small amount of gravel. And we have this weird obsession with the word fit. So fit-like is basically how are you. But fit can be what, it can be your foot, it can be fit as in fit, does this fit, which is a perfectly legitimate thing to say in an Aberdonian shoe shop. And when I first moved up to Aberdeen, I didn't have a local accent. And according to my parents, I learnt one very, very quickly because it stopped you getting kicked.
Well, we're going to revisit your Aberdeen childhood. Records, I think, your parents played.
Yes, when I was a wee boy, my mum and dad had a collection of classical musics in an old, dusty, green-grey box, this huge piece of vinyl. But one of my favourites was always The Planet Suite by Holst, and Mars is just such a great way to kick off a performance of anything. I mean, imagining what that must have been like to just batter out across the auditorium. And not just in 1918 when it came out, but also when my wife first heard this in her sitting room in Fife when she was a little girl, she was shocked by what was coming out of the speakers because it is just so huge and bombastic.
John Elliott Gardiner conducting the Philharmonia Orchestra in Mars, the Bringer of War, From the Planets by Gustav Holst. Stirring stuff.
Well, how could you possibly fail to be moved by that? And the way it builds and builds and gets bigger and bigger and darker and more. It's just, it's everything that music should be.
You once said, Stuart, that your childhood was, to quote you, very dull. But I wonder if that's a good thing for a writer, because you begin to live in your imagination.
I think it's absolutely essential. I mean, if you don't have that space to let your mind wander and actually do things, you know, if my childhood was spent with nothing but screens to poke and fiddle at and entertainment pumped into my eyeballs 24/7, would I be a writer today? Possibly. I wouldn't be the same kind of writer, certainly. I mean, a lot of my books come from those sort of staring slightly blankly out of the window, wondering, I wonder what would happen if, and then picking it up from there. I don't just say that to prove to my wife that when I'm just staring blankly off into space, it's not because I've gone into standby mode. I am actually working.
I hope she'll take note. I imagine the Aberdeen Public Library probably played quite an important part in that uneventful childhood.
Well, the libraries I've always considered them to be just, they are cathedrals of knowledge. And this was the one place that you could come to find your own path to knowledge. Everywhere else, someone is trying to push you down the route that they think that you should take. But with a library, that one card that you're issued with is a golden ticket to worlds and experiences that you get to choose. And I immediately found myself drawn to crime fiction, which I didn't realise at the time. I thought, oh, I'm just reading exciting stories about the Hardy Boys solving mysteries. And I just blitzed all the way through those books. I would take one out a day, read it at night under the covers when I was supposed to be asleep and everybody else was in bed, return it the next morning and get the next one out in the series. So I just ripped all the way through them. And then for some reason, the librarian thought, well, you know what would be good now that you've finished the Hardy Boys? Dashiell Hammett, Red Harvest, that'll go for you. So that was a slight change in tone and a huge change in quality as well.
It wasn't until your mid-20s that you really started thinking of a career as a writer, was it? How did that come about?
Well, even then, I didn't think of a career as a writer. I had a couple of friends who were writing fantasy novels for a hobby, and they said it was fun and I should give it a go. So I did, and it is such a drug. People think when we write crime fiction that we're playing detective. That's not true at all. Like all writers, we are playing God. So I get to decide who lives, who dies, what happens, what things look like. It is the only part of life where I have complete and utter control of everything. Until it's finished, and then it has to go to editors, and things start to change, and you have to collaborate. But that first draft, that being, you can be as wrathful a god as you like, or you can be beneficent, or you can be both.
Next, music which must surely count among the favourite arias of all time, Dido's Lament. But we shouldn't hold the fact that it's so popular against it, should we?
No. There are so many different interpretations of Dido's Lament as well. I mean, for me, it has to be Janet Baker. Because I don't think I understand that the more traditional performances that are faster and higher are closer to as it was envisaged, but I don't think anybody actually sells the emotion of the piece the way that Dame Janet Baker does. My sister-in-law is an opera singer, and she was up at Haddo House and she was given the task of singing Dido's Lament. And Lady Aberdeen was conducting her at the time, and she was getting slower and slower and slower until we had drifted through Janet Baker territory and all the way down until it was like a 75 record played at 33 and a third. And she and Valerie was basically going blue and trying to stay upright and breathe and sing at the same time. Taking it a little far, I think.
Well, we're not going to hear your sister-in-law expiring, although this is a very slow performance, because it was made in 1961 when Janet Baker was just 28. Janet Baker with When I Am Laid in Earth from the third act of Henry Purcell's Dido and Aeneas. Anthony Lewis conducting the English Chamber Orchestra. It is, of course, incredibly popular, that piece, isn't it?
And there's a good reason for it.
That makes me think about the whole idea that anything very popular must somehow be suspect. The books you write, for instance, I read a wonderful quotation from you. You said, a lot of people think that literature is a five-star restaurant and crime fiction is a burger van. So do you resent the label crime fiction?
No, not at all. I have a difficulty with one genre sneering at another. There's quite a habit within the crime writing community, certainly, of saying, hey, we write about murder and horrible things, but we're lovely people. Romance writers, however, they write about lovely things, and they're all horrible. And no genre is any better or worse than any others. There are some spectacular romance writers. There's some spectacular writers of what gets called women's fiction, for some bizarre reason. There are great crime writers. There are great literary writers. There are terrible writers in all of these fields as well. It's just a good book is a good book. And whether it is or not a good book is down to whether you've enjoyed it.
You've had great fun, Stuart, sometimes reading out to festivals the good and the bad reviews. What's the funniest one you ever had?
Oh, I have two very close contenders for favourites, one of which was for my debut novel, Cold Granite, when it came out, and it was, Dear Mr. McBride, Aberdeen was Scotland's sunniest city 2004. And that was it. He had reviewed the weather in my book because it takes place in the winter and it snows and rains. Shock horror. My other favourite one is for a French edition of my book that was for sale on Amazon in the UK, and it was a one-star review, and it was basically, I bought this book, it's in French, I don't read French. It says it's a French translation. It's the title is in French, La Mort de Cosse. What did you think you were getting? And then to post that on the internet.
I once had one that you'd like, which was that Mr. Barclay beats hell out of the piano. The very lid was shaking and nearly fell off. This is the most loud of music we've ever heard in Australia.
Ooh, that sounds good.
There's a great sense of humour running through all your books. It's a coping mechanism for your characters as they encounter grisly crimes. But I wonder whether you think there's something distinctly Scottish about the sense of humour.
I think that's probably universal when it comes to people who deal with these kinds of things. Having spent quite a lot of time with police officers, I can guarantee they're not the po-faced guardians of justice that they normally present themselves to be. They are people just like you and me. They just do a very, very strange job.
I'm really grateful for the next music because it is something I was unfamiliar with. It's a concerto for didgeridoo by the Australian composer Sean O'Boyle. How did you come across this?
Well, I came across this through writing. I was contacted by Sean, who had read one of my books and enjoyed them, and I swapped him a book, and he sent me a couple of his CDs. Again, it comes back to my love of the darkness in music. There is something very primeval about the way a didgeridoo makes me feel.
This is a collaboration between Sean O'Boyle and the didgeridoo maestro William Barton from a concerto with four different sections for all the elements, of which this is fire. We'll be right back.
It is. It's like a cross between a human voice and some great beast that lurks in the darkness. It raises the hairs on the back of my neck and my arms listening to that. It's such a wonderful piece.
Fire, the final movement from Sean O'Boyle's Concerto for Didgeridoo. William Barton was the soloist in the 2007 recording with the Queensland Symphony Orchestra, conducted by the composer. I can see why the composer found an affinity with your own work, Stuart, because your crime novels are very dark. The latest is called No Less the Devil, and without giving too much away, it's about a serial killer who tears out the hearts of his victims. Why do you think you're drawn to quite such dark subjects?
For me, it's not about the crime. It's not about how can I make this dark and gory. It's about the characters. So all the darkness really grows organically from the people that I'm telling the story about.
Well, clearly readers do enjoy the blood and gore, the grisly details. Why do you think that is in? What is it in us that makes us want to read that kind of detail?
If you look at things like The Legend of Beowulf, that is pretty much one of the first written down serial killer thrillers. And all the way through, we are fascinated by this stuff, because crime fiction in some ways gives us a safe space to explore these things. We know it's not real, and we know that there will be some sort of resolution by the time we get to the end of it. So what we experience in the middle is safe. And I've always taken the view that I didn't want to be the kind of writer that went, "Look away, gentle reader. What you're about to see, you shouldn't see. So here are some pictures of puppies. You focus on that. And the nice police officers will take care of the grisly bits." I want you to be in the head of the point of view character. So if he sees something horrible, I want you to see it with him. And a lot of writers will say, "Oh, but the reader can make up something far worse than I could invent." But I don't want you off inventing your own things. I want you to feel what it's like to be the point of view character. I want you in that person's shoes, which is why if they see something horrible, you see it too, so that you can understand what it is to be them. So it's all back to that character-driven thing.
The next choice is for your wife, Fiona, and for your late cat, Grendel. It's the Adagio from the Violin Concerto by Brooke.
Yes, or Mr. Brunch, as I'm not allowed to call him in the house because Fiona thinks it sounds frightfully common. Yes, Grendel, our beloved cat. Fiona and I have never had children, so we have poured all our love into our animals. And Grendel was very much the first cat that we had together. She was my celebration for getting a publishing deal. We went out and got ourselves a beautiful little Maine Coon kitten, and she was my constant companion for writing all the way up until last year. So No Less the Devil was the last book that I actually wrote with my little girl as my writing companion. And a few years ago, back when we still had Grendel, Fiona was sitting in a car park listening to Radio 3, and Mr. Brunch's Violin Concerto, number 1 in G minor, came on. And again, I should stress that I do actually know his name is Bruch, but, you know, it annoys Fiona, so I keep doing it. And it came on, and she sat in the car park and listened to this, and it was so achingly sweet that she couldn't not think of Grendel, and she just burst into tears because it was it just spoke to her. And she came home that evening and told me this, and I listened to it, and I thought, I'm not really getting it, but, you know, hey, maybe 5 people are weird. They, you know, go down that kind of direction. And then it got to the bit about 2/3 of the way through where the music swells. It's like it takes a deep breath and it suddenly opens up and becomes much bigger. And at that point, you know, I got a little something in my eye and my throat tightened. And I think, yeah, yep, okay, I definitely get where you're coming from here. And it's always just reminded me so much of her. And how much we loved her, and how much we still do.
Thank you.
The slow movement from the Violin Concerto No. 1 in G minor by Max Bruch, or Max Brunch. Sonoko Miriam Velda was the soloist in that recording released earlier this year with the Oslo Philharmonic Orchestra, conducted by Tabita Berglund. Music you've chosen, Stuart, in memory of your cat, Grendel, and for your wife, Fiona. You met Fiona way back before you became a successful writer. You were both on stage in a musical, I think. So I believe your first kiss was a scripted one.
It was, yes. I had joined a musical society in order to meet the women, and that worked out well. A lot of people, if you're listening and you're going to university, join the musical societies. That's where all the ladies are.
You've tried various ways to impress her over the years, and I think the next choice relates to one of them, Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata.
Ah, yes. Now, this obviously is a very popular one for obvious reasons, but I had inherited from my grandmother 2 spoons, a pot, a fork for carving, and an old upright piano. Now, I never had lessons when I was a child, but I just adore musical instruments, just as pieces of art. I think they're absolutely wonderful things. And the fact that you can make exquisite music come out of them is just a huge bonus. But I thought it was a rather large birthday, and I thought, wouldn't it be nice to learn to play something on the piano in secret, because I was working from home at that point, being a writer. Fiona was still at work. And I decided that what I would do is learn how to play Moonlight. That I would take some lessons, and in between doing all the little da 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 up one da 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 2 hands now, and you know, nursery rhymes and things, and then for about 20 minutes at the end of every lesson, having done Ba Ba Black Sheep for the first flipping 3/4 of an hour. We would work on the Moonlight Sonata. And Fiona had gone to work on her birthday, and her office had got her, shall we say, somewhat tanked up on champagne and delivered back to the house in a taxi. And I took her through into the library, where the piano was at the time, sat her down next to me on the bench and said, "Now, this is for you." Opened the lid and played the first movement all the way through. And Fiona sort of beamed at me in a slightly Moet and Chandon kind of way. And she thought that I'd actually had the piano converted into a pianola. And can you not see? I've been working the pedals. Did you not see me working the pedals? I thought that was you turning the barrel. And I love it. I love this piece so much. It's probably the only piece I can play on the piano. But I do not do that metronomic, all beats in the place that they're meant to be. It's such a wonderful one for stretching and pushing and raising the volume and quietening down, and just, oh, it makes me feel like a proper music person when I play it.
Well, we could hear you, or we could hear a pianola, but if you want, you can choose Martin Roscoe. Which one is it to be?
Oh, let's give Martin a spin, shall we? Now, it helps that I love an adagio. I really do love an adagio. It sends little shivers.
I'm sure you'd agree, having read your work, Stuart, that it's the light that actually makes the dark darker. It's that contrast. And I wouldn't necessarily have expected a romantic streak from such a violent crime writer.
Well, I would love to write a rom-com. When we do those Watch Your Top 10 films, about six of them are rom-coms. So I have a romantic streak a mile wide.
And Winnie the Pooh, that's another of your favourites, isn't it?
Winnie the Pooh was my book. It was the book that made me a reader. And I think all of us who are readers will have deep within us that one book, that sparked a love of reading that has just lasted our entire lives. And for me, it was Winnie the Pooh. It was the first book that I actually read for myself, it had been read to me many times before that, but actually was able to pick out the words on my own. And this is great. Reading is just the best. And that stayed with me.
I think A.A. Milne was actually the subject with which you won Celebrity Mastermind, wasn't it?
He was my specialist subject, yes. The Life and Major Works of A.A. Milne. That was an experience. What I like to call a once-in-a-lifetime one, because there's no way in heck I am ever doing that again.
And as a result, you wrote a very dark take on Pooh.
Well, a semi-dark, but it's sort of half-dark, half-light. The book is called Now We Are Dead, and it's it's populated with characters from Milne's real life, because I had to do all this research to go on Mastermind, and there was no way in heck I was letting that go to waste. So, yeah, all the characters pretty much are there because they featured in some way in Milne's life.
I think we cannot go without painting every corner of your career for our listeners. And that brings me to your achievement as world champion of stovies. So what's involved in creating the perfect stovie dish?
Creating the perfect stovie dish is very much a matter of personal taste and the sort of things that can cause wars north of the border. Everybody will have their own preferred method, and they will fight to the death anybody who does it in any way differently. I have been harangued at crime festivals for talking about my World Stovies Champion award by somebody who's going, "You can't have the best stovies in the world because you don't have sausages in them." She had been drinking slightly at that point. My version involves a slow-cooked leg of lamb leftovers from the night before, and it's a labour of love. You can make it with beef, you can make it with lamb. Some people make it with corned beef, but they are sick, twisted and wrong. You can make it with sausages, whether drunk or sober. It's what you have left over, padded out with meat and onions and gravy, all mixed up into one mushy, delicious hug in a bowl.
Well, we must leave you to go off and cook your stovies for this evening. I only wish I could share them with you, but we're going to play out with Carmina Burana by Carl Orff. Not the famous opening, I'm rather happy to say, but a song about the coming of spring and love. What do you like about this?
Well, I used to do voiceovers for local radio, and this was always my warm-up track. I would go into the voiceover booth and get them to play Omnia Sol Temperat, and I would rip along with it. And by the time I got to the end of one sing-through of that, my voice had dropped down and become much more radio, much more dark and much more, "Hello, welcome, this is Radio 3, kind of tone to it. Which was, you know, excellent when you had to go, "Are you looking for a second-hand motor? Come down to Mangle Motors, oh!"
I used to do greyhound racing in much the same voice. Anyway, wonderful to dream about spring by listening to this, your final choice. So it only remains for me, Stuart McBride, to thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a delight.
Novo mundo reterat faciem aprilis ad amorem operat animus feliris et iocundis imperat Deus Reum tanta novitas in solemni fere, et veris autoritas iubet nos caudere, vias crebet solitas, et in tuo vere, fides est et probitas, tuum retinere.
Christopher Moltmann was the soloist in that aria from the first part of Carmina Burana by Karl Orff. Richard Hickox was conducting the London Symphony Orchestra. And that was the final choice of Michael Barclay's guest on Private Passions today, the crime novelist Stuart McBride. The episode was produced by Elizabeth Burke, and it was a Loftus Media production for BBC Radio 3. And you can find details of all today's music if you search for Private Passions on BBC Sounds, where you can also download hundreds of previous editions. And fellow lovers of Aberdeen can hear a series of lunchtime concerts from the city's Cowdray Hall starting next month. Private Passions returns next Sunday at noon, when Michael's guest will be the writer Julia Blackburn. BBC Radio 3 on 90 to 93 FM, digital radio and on BBC Sounds. It's 1 o'clock and time for the news, read by me, Jane Royce. The United Nations annual climate change summit is underway in Egypt. Over the next 12 days, more than 100 world leaders, including the Prime Minister Rishi Sunak, will take part in the 12-day gathering in Sharm el-Sheikh. The UN's weather and climate body says the past 8 years are on track to be the hottest on record, and the impacts are becoming more severe. The World Meteorological Organization says there have been devastating floods, droughts and heat waves this year, along with an accelerated rise in sea levels. The UN's new climate change chief, Simon Steele, said in his opening speech that the focus would now be on implementing goals rather than setting them. The sister of the Egyptian-British political activist Alaa Abdel Fattah, who's in prison in Egypt, says he's stopped drinking water as he starts a full hunger strike to coincide with the opening of COP27. Sana Saif says she'll be going to the summit to raise the issue of her brother, who's serving a 5-year jail sentence on charges of spreading false news. A senior cabinet minister has acknowledged that Rishi Sunak knew bullying allegations had been made against Sir Gavin Williamson before he brought him back into government. Oliver Dowden said the Prime Minister had not seen the details of the expletive-laden texts that Sir Gavin had sent to a colleague, which had been published by the Sunday Times. Mr. Dowden said the texts were unacceptable, but said he could not comment further as a complaint from the former Chief Whip Wendy Morton was being investigated. A passenger plane carrying 43 people has come down in Lake Victoria in Tanzania while trying to land during bad weather. Authorities say 26 people have been rescued and taken to hospital. The government says there are well-oiled contingency plans in place should nurses choose to strike in a dispute about pay and staffing levels. The Royal College of Nursing says a large majority of its members have voted for industrial action, but the results are still being counted. The Labour leader, Keir Starmer, says the NHS is recruiting too many people from overseas. He said immigration was not the solution to a staffing crisis and called for more recruitment from within the UK. And the weather, a cloudy and rainy day for most, with longer spells of rain in southeast England. It'll be drier and clearer this evening. Temperatures will reach 11 Celsius in Edinburgh, 12 in Belfast. BBC News.
Essential classics. Whether you're working, studying, on the move, or simply relaxing, we've got the perfect soundtrack to your morning. Be enchanted by chamber music. Delighted by Baroque gems. Swept away by a waltz. And wowed by masterworks. For beautiful, inspiring, and surprising music to accompany your morning, join me.